what I realized was I had this traditional portfolio of stocks and bonds. I never transitioned. So when I started with traditional, I started in 2004. So I had close to like, I'm approaching, you know, 17 years of doing traditional assets. I didn't want to give that up because I thought there were a lot of pros to just, you know, investing in equities. However, I realized that the biggest negative in investing in traditional assets is it was always really hard to create an income from a traditional portfolio. I thought that the traditional stock and bond 60-40 rules, 70-30 rules, I thought there was a little outdated in terms of the interest rates that we were looking at. I never really bought into that model. So what I started doing is I started looking at my alternative portfolio with my real estate and my note funds and my ATM funds as the way to complement my traditional portfolio.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy Show with your host, Annie Nelson. And today, the special guest is Dennis Shapiro. And Dennis began investing in real estate back in 2012 when the market was just beginning to recover from the global financial crisis. That was a good time to get in. He built a cash flowing portfolio, including many alternative assets such as note and ATM funds, mobile home parks, life insurance policies, tech startups, industrial property, short-term rentals, and more. He co-founded an investment club for accredited investors in 2019. Following the success of his investor club, he launched SIH Capital Group, which provides accredited investors with a simplified strategy to invest for passive income. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I found it very interesting. You've only been in the market a short time, really, and you have accomplished so much. And getting in after the GFC, that was a masterstroke.
Yeah, you know, that's somewhat of a luck given my age. I went to college right in the heart of it. So it was kind of, you know, usually in your college days, your income is pretty lean. So I didn't really have too much of a choice. I did start actually investing in traditional, you know, stocks and bonds when I was 14 in high school, but it was very limited. It wasn't a huge thing. It was more of like lessons learned type of situation. My big brother actually gave me a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And, you know, I got the bug to start investing at the time. I just didn't know how and when. And it's been a huge learning process ever since.
I know it was very trying times back in the global financial crisis times when real estate did plummet. So getting in after that was would help set you up.
Yeah, no, definitely some luck in the timing. I was fortunate in that sense. I do remember when I was invested in stocks, I remember I probably logged into my brokerage account maybe like a total of 3 times during that time period to execute a trade. And I remember like holding my breath to try not to look at my like account portfolio, like the total balance. So I was trying to like sign in, make the trade without actually looking how down I was. So I do remember some of the downsides of the global financial crisis. So it didn't escape me completely, but my net worth was probably like 1% of what I'm at today. So it was much easier to deal with the crisis when you're just starting out than when you're approaching, you know, retirement, unfortunately.
Well, they say things go in cycles. So we'll see which cycle. Obviously, it's real estate's turn now, and even the stock market's up as well. One of the things that you talk about in your notes was that that the people in the FIRE movement miss out. Can you explain that more? By FIRE, we're talking about the financially independent retire early movement. What have you got to say about what they miss out on?
So this is just from personal experience. So I remember I started getting down the rabbit hole in like 2014, 2015. It was pretty early on. I think I read Mr. Money Mustache, and you know, I wrote an article at the time. I had a personal blog at the time, like the day my cubicle stood still, because I was just amazed. The whole rabbit hole really came about where I was working on an overtime shift. I asked a coworker of mine that I actually started the same day with, and I said, you know, like, what do you like? Do you ever think about like retiring and everything like that? You know, like sometimes I daydream, you know, do I need 2 million? Do I need 3 million? Do I need 1 million? Like, do you think of this? And she's like, well, this is actually interesting because a coworker just told me about this blog where you don't need much to retire. So I started reading the blog. I became enamored by it. I went down the whole rabbit hole. And what I felt like the FIRE movement does really well, it covers the basics. Like it's like, okay, the formula is much simpler than financial advisors would like you to believe it is, right? You save more, you invest more, you spend less, and you can, you know, arbitrage the difference, and you can have a pretty good life, and you get to a 25 time number. But if that's all you're focused on, the problem is you're focused on getting out of the tunnel. Like you're going full speed, you're going towards the light in the tunnel. The problem is what happens when you get to the end of that tunnel, right? So you get this situation where all these people retire and what they expect is like, well, I'm going to travel. I'm going to wake up with an alarm clock and I'm going to do all these amazing things. I'm going to be with my kids all day. And then reality hits. And it's like, okay, now you completely took out the social aspect of your life in terms of, you know, the whole working scenario. And now you have a situation. It's like, what are you really going to do with your time? Because most of the plans that these people think are going to be long term are actually very short term plans. You know, you catch up on, you wake up without alarm clock a few times and then the novelty of it wears off. So now it's like, what do you do then? So I think the FIRE movement really misses out on over-focusing on getting out of the rat race without really building up a life outside of your actual job, where it's like, okay, if you really want to be, you know, if you really want to homeschool your kids and that's your passion, right? A, that's only going to take up a portion of your day. B, try it a day a week, you know, to see if you actually like it. I would never want to homeschool my three kids. So I think that's the big thing that it misses on. It only takes a few years to execute the FIRE blueprint, but it might take longer than that for you to find what you're actually passionate about. And that's what I think is it needs to be more emphasized. It's like, okay, it's great. You can get to the retirement. You can retire early. Great. But then what? And that's the what I feel like needs to be stressed on more and more with equal importance to the fact that you're saving money and investing. It needs to be that you really are building a life outside of what you were used to.
Right. You've achieved a lot and you've done many things in your career going through your business, and you've gone from building a network, starting from zero, to starting an investment club. All of these steps you've taken have been a guiding step, I suppose, for you to where you are now. So would you like to talk about where you came from and how you ended up where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. So like I mentioned before, so I started investing in stocks and bonds in about 2004. I went to college, a business school, because I thought that's kind of where I wanted to really spend my career on. Obviously, the global financial crisis didn't do too well for that. So then I started working for the government. I'm in the United States. So I was working for the United States government. And when I got my first paycheck, I quickly realized that the government was not only my employer, they were also my business partner. So that's when I started looking into, well, you know, what can I do to alleviate my tax burden legally? So that's when I kind of got involved in real estate in 2012. And ever since then, I started building up a more passive and passive portfolio. So I started with rentals, but then I moved on to different funds and different alternative assets that don't require such active participation, but only when you get to the point where you actually understand the actual investment. So I think a lot of times investors, they get pitched on, oh, these are passive, these are passive, these are passive. But they only become passive after you actually understand them to a certain point. Because otherwise, it's almost like gambling if you don't have that basic knowledge of what it actually is. Same thing with even buying a single family rental. Because if you're just going to give it to a third-party property manager, you're never really going to understand the ins and outs. And you need to go through that period before it can become passive, before you can, you know, hand it over. So what I realized was I had this traditional portfolio of stocks and bonds. I never transitioned. So when I started with traditional, I started in 2004. So I had close to like, I'm approaching, you know, 17 years of doing traditional assets. I didn't want to give that up because I thought there were a lot of pros to just, you know, investing in equities. However, I realized that the biggest negative in investing in traditional assets is it was always really hard to create an income from a traditional portfolio. I thought that the traditional stock and bond 60-40 rules, 70-30 rules, I thought there was a little outdated in terms of the interest rates that we were looking at. I never really bought into that model. So what I started doing is I started looking at my alternative portfolio with my real estate and my note funds and my ATM funds as the way to complement my traditional portfolio. So the problem is with traditional assets like stocks and bonds, there are a lot of analysts out there. You can go in, you can, you know, read one analyst report after another, or you could just simplify your life and just invest in index funds and kind of put it on autopilot. In the alternative space, it wasn't like that. If you wanted unbiased information, you really had to network. And that's where I kind of I started going to conferences and meetups, and I started on a quarterly basis networking with other investors who are doing similar types of investments as me. And what I noticed is the time I saved by autopiloting my traditional portfolio, I was allocating to my alternative asset set portfolio, and the combination worked really, really well. I had autopilot appreciation from my index fund, but then I had great income and great yield, but also very much more time consuming on the alternative side. So I kind of married the two into what I thought was a much better strategy for me.
All right. And I see that you believe these are critical in your portfolio. Have you got any more to add about that, why it's critical?
Yeah, I think from investing in traditional stocks and bonds, an investor will tend to get frustrated with the yield that it can produce, especially in the FIRE movement. The traditional adage is, well, you're going to live off some of your dividends and then you're going to sell off some of your portfolio every single year, but your portfolio is supposed to grow to a certain amount. And then, you know, in reality, you know, the Trinity study and everything like that confirms that, you know, you could live a really happy life if you adjust the 4% rule here and there. I have three kids. I wanted to have some sort of legacy. So what I realized is that the 4% rule, even though it's great in theory, it's not what I wanted. I wanted a portfolio to do both. I wanted a portfolio to appreciate and a portfolio to kick off enough income in my life where I didn't have to worry about selling a portion of my assets every single year. I wanted to build on those assets. So that's where I feel like alternative investments is like the secret sauce in doing that, because alternative investments, the focus is more on yield, but it does have an appreciation kicker. And I think traditional, you know, stocks and bonds have a much more appreciation focus with a little bit of a yield. So that's where I really think the two kind of marry really nicely versus trying to have it as a versus mentality. I try to really consider it as an end mentality.
All right. So have you got into multi-asset income funds then?
Yeah. So I actually, after the success of the investment club, after a few years, I looked into ways of expanding it where I could start helping other people actually achieve some of their passive income goals. So I founded SIH Capital Group. And I have a multi-asset fund where I invest in apartment buildings, self-storage, mobile home parks. And because it's more than one asset, it's considered a multi-asset income fund. But what happens is you could blend the business plans of the different asset classes. Like, for example, apartment buildings and self-storage and mobile home parks, they have a slow wind-up period. So what you'll end up doing is the year that the apartment buildings are purchased, there's huge closing costs and there's huge fees associated. And it usually takes a year or two for the cash flow to really start ramping up. Now, other businesses like ATM funds, they have a much more heavy cash flow. So when you could blend the two, you could actually, it allows me to actually pay my investors a more consistent return from day one. So a multi-asset fund, if it's structured the right way, can produce a lot of benefit dependent on how it is designed.
So typically, how many different types of assets do you have in your multi-asset income funds?
So we have five, and four are heavily real estate based. So it's apartment buildings, self-storage, mobile home parks. I also invest in other multi-asset funds that are real estate based. And the only non-real estate play is ATM funds. And the only reason for the ATM funds is because of the cash flow that it produces. So mostly the portfolio is, 80%, 80 to 90% all commercial real estate.
Okay. And what type of investors are you targeting? Who are you helping mainly?
So this is for the fund is a 506c. Well, this is in the United States. It's for accredited investors only. And the fund is really for someone who's putting an emphasis on adding income to their portfolio, not exactly a total appreciation play. From a total appreciation play, you could probably get better returns somewhere else. But from a play where you're looking to add income to your portfolio while lowering your volatility, because we don't invest in any public securities, it's all private securities, the fund actually will do its job. And it'll do its job almost from day one versus having a wind-up period with other places.
Okay. And how long do your funds go for? Is there like infinite, or are they wound up at certain times?
So it's not an evergreen fund. It is a closed fund. What ends up happening is I have to match my fund with the longest dated investment in my fund. So the longest dated investment in my fund is 10 years. So when I launched my fund in the start of the year, it's a 10-year fund. But the goal would be, once you start getting capital events in between year 3 to 5, it start offering liquidity. But in the securities document, everything has to match the longest dated investment. So it's 10 years.
Okay. And do investors get the income only, or do they get a benefit towards the end of capital appreciation?
So this is what's a little bit different. So mine is more of an income fund than a real estate fund. I wanted to remove a lot of the hurdles from investors, especially investors who are getting, new to the space. I didn't want to, there's a lot of jargon out there in terms of, waterfalls and preferred splits and everything like that. What I wanted to do is I wanted to prioritize my investors' income first. So they get a 7% preferred return, but then there is no back end. But what I am able to achieve is the way I structured the fund is that they're almost getting a 7% from day one. So they literally invest on May 1st. By June 1st, the next month, they're already getting their 7% annualized, because there's already deals in the fund that are already operating and paying out.
Okay. So when it comes towards the end of this 10 years, and I assume you're hoping that your investors will stay in there for the whole length of the time, is there any plans that you will then offer them something else to invest in when this one matures?
Yeah, so this is my first fund. I just wanted to make sure the model is perfect and everything like that. So this fund is relatively small. I expect to be fully raised within a year or so. But then on additional funds, I plan on launching additional funds probably between year 2 and 3. So there'll always be something to transition into. So let's say in year 3 to 5, I offer liquidity and, you don't want to wait the whole 10 years. There'll be a different fund at that point. So this is just my first income fund.
Well, congratulations on that. And income is something that we all need. Especially as we look to retire, we want to have that income coming in that's reliable. And I know that you don't get much for keeping your money parked in the bank, that's for sure. So I see you've got a bit of a book here, The Alternative Investment Almanac. Would you like to share some of your wisdom from that?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the Alternative Investment Almanac is been a passion project of mine for about a year now. So what ended up happening is during my networking, I would be talking to one investor about apartment buildings and they would say like, oh yeah, I've done that. But have you looked into, you know, self-storage or mobile home parks? And what I realized is that so many of these assets are intertwined. So once you get a familiarity of apartment buildings, you can actually, you know, you'll have the basic knowledge to invest in self-storage or mobile home parks. It's all about, it's all commercial real estate, all revolves around the same terms. So what I wanted to do is when I was launching my fund, I realized that there were a lot of misconceptions out there. Most of the whole syndication world and alternative investment space, a lot of that derives from the 2012 Jobs Act. So the whole industry has been around only, you know, a decade or less. And before that, it used to be known as like country club transactions because you had to have known the operator. And usually that's where the operators would go. They would go to the country club to try to recruit investors. So there's been so much, you know, movement in the last 9 years or so. I really wanted to write a book to show traditional investors that there's a whole world out there that's surprisingly really easy to invest in. The only reason why they might not have heard about it is because maybe their financial advisor said it's not a good move or something like that, or they've heard a bad story. So one of my whole points in the book is every single asset in the book, and I think I have about 8 of them, everything from mobile home parks to startup tech funds, is I wanted to include a section called the bad apples. So that section is all about, you know, how there has been, you know, wrongdoings in that asset class, but it doesn't make the whole asset class uninvestable. You know, I like to say like, well, if you're going to say that every alternative investment is a Ponzi scheme, then are you never going to invest in the stock because of Enron and WorldCom? At the end of the day, there are bad operators, but there are things to look out for. And as you become a more experienced investor and as you learn the language and you learn some basic underwriting, you can easily invest in this whole world of alternative assets without having to give up what you do have as your in your equity portfolio. You could do both. So, and I also wanted to hark on to alternative investors that most of them have like moved on from traditional assets. Most of them have said, oh, real estate is so much better than my stocks and bonds. I'm just going to sell all my stocks and bonds and I'm just going to buy all real estate. I just wanted to show to the alternative investors that there is still a lot of benefits from owning a traditional portfolio. So I wanted to kind of make write a book that kind of marries the ideas to give the traditional investors a high level introduction to different alternative investments that are out there. The way I structured the book is that it's instead of going 300 pages on one asset class, I try to give high-level introductions that are between 15 to 20 to 30 pages of the actual asset class. And then the coolest part is it goes into 2 Q&As with 2 really well-regarded investors from that space. And you just hear what they have to say. And every single chapter follows through. So you don't have to read the whole book from start to finish. You could say, hey, I really want to learn about ATM funds. So you could read the ATM fund chapter, or I really want to learn about investing in life insurance policies. I could just read that chapter. And then if you like what you read in that chapter, you can say, okay, now I'm going to go down the rabbit hole and learn about investing in life insurance policies. You know, so it allows you to get a glimpse. And then if you want to take the next step, by all means, there's hundreds of great podcasts out there and everything like that. But I want people to be aware that there's a world out there that actually does exist of these alternative assets.
All right. So in summary, it sounds like your book is a good introduction to a lot of alternative investment strategies. What else would you recommend that a beginner do? Should they join an investment club or what's a good starting place?
I'd probably say investment club is probably towards like the middle of the journey. I think the best place to actually start is actually like on LinkedIn, what I recommend is just put, you could, if you're interested in real estate investments or alternative investments, just put that in your title, like below your picture. You're going to start getting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of requests, you know, for 15 minutes of your time. We'd love to talk to you about this. We'd love to talk to you about that. You know, filter the ones that are most serious, because you do get scammers on that as well. But if you filter the ones that are the most serious, what you do is you book those 15-minute conversations and then just literally have a conversation. Listen to the words that are being used. Write down any words that you're not familiar with. What that will allow you to do is that will actually allow you to build some kind of basic understanding for alternative investments. And once you have that basic understanding, then you could actually start developing your network, because you don't want to start developing your network and be so new that you can't have a conversation, because it is almost like a different language. When you start investing in alternative investments, it is. It has certain terms that if you're not using them right or anything like that, you can clearly tell really quickly if someone doesn't know what they're talking about. So I recommend use LinkedIn to kind of start building out a little bit of a network. Use it to learn the language. And then once you have that, you know, that basic understanding done, then you go in and you really start networking with other investors. What investments are they looking at? What are they doing? And once that's on a quarterly basis, then you could actually start thinking about making investments, because alternative investments, not all of them are cheap. Some of them are actually very expensive. And so you want to invest your time before you invest your money in alternative investments.
Okay, so what sort of money are we talking about as a minimum investment in your alternative investment fund?
So my fund, I tried to make it as accessible as possible. So it's only $10,000. But most deals that I've invested in the alternative investment space is usually right around $50,000 or more, because they are private securities. So the problem with private securities is there's a lot of costs associated, because you become what's called a limited partner. So usually there are a lot of costs associated per partner in the fund. So that's why the minimums tend to be somewhat higher. Otherwise, there's also a set number of investors that certain operators can take. So usually the minimums you'll find for, like, if you want to invest in an apartment building or another multi-asset fund, is usually in that $50,000 ballpark.
Okay. I wonder if there's too many different ones you can be involved in then.
There is, yeah. There's a lot of crowdfunding places that have much lower minimums. My personal experience in the crowdfunding space is that it limits the amount of learning that you end up doing, because you're trusting their algorithms and their ability to screen out the deals. And for me personally, it hasn't worked out very well. You know, when I first started, because that's the route I went. So I was like, oh, great. Look, I can make these $10,000 investments. But in hindsight, I think I would have rather waited and learned more. And then when I was able to actually make the $50,000 investment, then a series of $10,000 investments that I learned very little from and ended up going sideways.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks very much for sharing your journey with us today. And how would people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about SIH Capital Group?
Yeah, so my book is on Amazon right now, The Alternative Investment Almanac by Dennis Shapiro. But the best way to reach me is definitely my website. If you go on www.sihcapitalgroup.com, I have two free ebooks. One is an abridged version of my book. The other one is the Q&As from my book. So there are two free ebooks on my website. If you hit the educational tab, there's literally 30 to 40 articles on alternative investments. And, you know, you feel free to contact me if any of those articles are of interest, or join the email list. And I would love to have a conversation with them.
All right. Well, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. And it's great to hear about alternative investing, because we so often we just sort of hear about the share market so much, and then from financial advisors about what's the right place to put your money. But if we're looking for income, there are alternatives out there. And it's been good for you to share your ideas with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.